I'm someone who loves trying out different makeup looks, but doesn't really wear much on a daily basis, so I like to focus on making sure I have high quality staples. And whether you like a fresh face, full glam, or somewhere in between, you've probably seen Thrive Cosmetics' viral tubing mascara. I've certainly seen it everywhere. You know the one in the turquoise tube? So that mascara, along with all of Thrive Cosmetics' beauty products, are certified 100% vegan and cruelty-free, which I look for in makeup, and they've got excellent quality to match. And something I didn't know from all the mascara videos I've seen is that for every product sold, Thrive Cosmetics donates either that same product, another product that is needed more, or a monetary donation. They've worked with over 500 nonprofits to help with a wide range of causes like supporting cancer survivors, people experiencing homelessness, education access, and so much more. Knowing that makes me feel even better about using their products. And I do enjoy using them. Like I said, I like having high quality staples, and so my favorites are products that are multi-purpose, like the Brilliant Eye Brightener. It comes in a bunch of colors, and I like using them as eyeliner, eyeshadow, and even highlighter. Thrive Cosmetics is luxury beauty that gives back. Right now, you can get an exclusive 20% off your first order at thrivecosmetics.com/thrive. That's Thrive Cosmetics, CAUSEMETICS. .com/thrive for 20% off your first order.
Are you thinking about getting into Dungeons & Dragons? Maybe you're looking to expand your horizons as a DM or a player. If that's the case, then it's time for you to check out The Dungeon Cast, the best D&D podcast out there that helps you passively learn all about the game just by listening. Join co-hosts Will and Brian as they break down the lore of a rich multiverse 50 years in the making in a lighthearted and beginner-friendly way. They cover everything from character creation options to tips for dungeon masters. There's something for everyone, no matter how long you've been playing TTRPGs. Find the Dungeon Cast anywhere you get podcasts or on YouTube.
True crime has always been fascinating to many people. Television shows like Unsolved Mysteries, Snapped, 48 Hours, and even fictional shows that are loosely based on true crime stories like Law & Order, NCIS, SVU, the list goes on and on, have always been supremely fascinating to a large and dynamic audience. I'm your host, Catherine Galvin, true crime enthusiast and psychic medium. I've co-hosted Real Hauntings with Noah a few times in the past and have graciously been asked to contribute a few episodes to the Real Hauntings Network. For more of my shows, you can find Murder and Mediumship on Spotify, iTunes, and just about anywhere you get your episodes. This is the story of the boy in the box.
In February 1957, in a neighborhood called Fox Chase in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, a man checking his illegal muskrat traps on Susquehanna Road stumbled upon something he probably never thought in his wildest dreams he would find. He noticed an old furniture box laying in the grass and weeds of an abandoned lot and didn't think anything of it as people in the area would dump stuff there all the time. However, this wasn't just an empty furniture box cast aside. It in fact had the body of a young boy in it, naked, beaten, and wrapped in a blanket. The first person who found the boy didn't even report it to police. Yes, the first person. Which seemed a little odd to me until later I had read that he was afraid the muskrat traps would be confiscated, seemingly small compared to a dead body of a child, but I suppose priorities. So it was the second person who stumbled upon this boy while following a rabbit that he had almost hit with his car. To each their own, I don't think I'd ever get out of a car to chase a rabbit, but you know, I guess, like I said, to each their own. After he sees the boy's corpse in the furniture box, he doesn't even go to police until the next day. Apparently, he had been caught as a peeping Tom before and didn't want to interact with the police. Other sources said that he actually talked to his priest, who told him he had to go. Regardless, police ultimately went to the dumping site and found the boy naked, wrapped in a flannel blanket, in a cardboard box, badly beaten and so thin that his ribs showed through his skin. After taking necessary photographs and searching for clues, they removed his body and brought him to the police station for an autopsy. No photographs of the crime scene will be available on Patreon for all listeners. The autopsy revealed that his death was due to blunt force trauma to the head. The time of death could not be determined because of the cold Philadelphia winter that allowed for longer preservation of the body, but he had been there for somewhere between a few days and up to even like 2 weeks. The poor child was so malnourished to the point that it was difficult to even determine his age. He was anywhere between 4 and 6 years old, and I will tell you now intuitively, I do feel he was closer to 6 years old. And in addition to his malnourishment, he was badly bruised and had clearly suffered from extensive and prolonged abuse. He had surgical scars on his ankle and groin area, as well as an L-shaped scar on his little chin. His light brown hair was cut haphazardly and lay in clumps on his naked body, suggesting that it may have even been cut post-mortem. Early on, police assumed that someone would be searching for this child and he would be easily identified, as most children don't go missing without being reported as such. However, they really couldn't have been more wrong. There were no missing children fitting his description in the area, and the case remains unsolved 64 years later. Over the course of the investigation, police visited children's homes, foster care homes, and hospitals. None had any missing children to report. One of the foster homes even had a bassinet, just like one that had been shipped in the box the boy had left, but the family was cleared in the investigation. So the only evidence they had to go on was the cardboard furniture box the boy had been found in, the blanket, and a blue hat found at the scene, which looks like what you would see maybe as like a golfing hat today or a poor boy's hat. I don't know if that even makes sense, but I'll put a photo on Patreon as well as that. So 400,000 flyers were printed and paid for by the local newspaper to be included in every single gas bill sent out. The box was able to be traced back to a JCPenney's in the city and had once carried a bassinet in it. However, all but one purchaser was tracked down and all of those leads, like I said, were dead ends. The blanket was one that had been mass-produced and could never be tracked down. It would take too long and it would be a really futile attempt at finding the person linked to that blanket. And the hat was even traced back to a woman. It was custom-made. And she remembered having a conversation with the man who bought it, but she couldn't remember his name, and the store kept no written record of it. The boy was buried in a potter's field in a far corner of the northeast of a northeast Philadelphia cemetery. Inscribed on his headstone were the words, "Heavenly Father, bless this unknown boy." In feeling into this case, it was kind of crazy. I instantly saw the image of a male and a female, which said to me that no one acted alone in this, and I, in fact, saw a lot of children around. Now, I will say that there have been multitudes of theories that have come from this case. One of them came from a girl named Martha who claimed to have witnessed her parents buying a child from a woman. Another insinuates that it was a foster care home or a foster center that had taken to like beating the boy, and he was the one that they mistreated the most. And then there are plenty of parents who actually thought that it could have been their missing child. But once they had traveled across the country, they would be shown that it actually wasn't their child. Other theories have been debunked as time has gone on and DNA has been made available to be tested, or testing of DNA has been made available. But ultimately, nothing ever has led to solving this case and identifying this poor boy, let alone what happened to him. So what I see when I feel into it is a woman, very, very mean-spirited, very angry woman. This isn't like when we talked about JonBenet a couple episodes back, how Patsy lost her temper and she kind of snapped, so to speak. This woman enjoyed doing what she did to this child, but I could see her hands on his shoulders. He was maybe 3 years old, and I see her handing this child over to a woman and a man. And I don't necessarily know that she paid for him, like one of the theories says, but she definitely was in charge of his care, and she looks very mean-spirited. And the woman who she hands the child over to is also very mean-spirited. So she has her hands like on his shoulders, and she pushes him forward to this woman who has a younger girl with her as well.
You can shop from anywhere doing pretty much anything. You might shop while working, eating, or even listening to this podcast. And however you shop, we all know and love the thrill of the hunt. But do you also know how to get the thrill of the best deals? Because Rakuten shoppers do. With Rakuten, they get the deals they love with the most savings and cash back. And you can get it too. Start getting cash back at your favorite stores like Sephora, Nike, and even Expedia if you're looking to get some travel in. And getting cash back doesn't mean you have to miss out on sales because those can just be stacked right on top. It's easy to use and based on a simple idea. Stores pay Rakuten for sending them shoppers, and Rakuten shares the money with you as cash back through PayPal or check. Download the free Rakuten app and never miss a deal. Or go to Rakuten.com to start getting the most bang for your buck. That's Rakuten. As a podcast network, our first priority has always been audio and the stories we're able to share with you. But we also sell merch, and organizing that was made both possible and easy with Shopify. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell and grow at every stage of your business, from the launch your online shop stage all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. They have an all-in-one e-commerce platform and in-person POS system, so wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. With the internet's best converting checkout, 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms, Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers. Shopify has allowed us to share something tangible with the podcast community we've built here, selling our beanies, sweatshirts, and mugs to fans of our shows without taking up too much time from all the other work we do to bring you even more great content. And it's not just us. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the US. Shopify is also the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/realm, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/REALM now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/realm. As a podcast network, our first priority has always been audio and the stories we're able to share with you. But we also sell merch, and organizing that was made both possible and easy with Shopify. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell and grow at every stage of your business, from the launch your online shop stage all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. They have an all-in-one e-commerce platform and in-person POS system, so wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. With the internet's best converting checkout, 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms, Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers. Shopify has allowed us to share something tangible with the podcast community we've built here, selling our beanies, sweatshirts, and mugs to fans of our shows without taking up too much time from all the other work we do to bring you even more great content. And it's not just us. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the US. Shopify is also the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/realm, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/REALM now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/realm.
And he looks, the man that's with her looks very well to do to me. He's got like a cream colored suit on and a matching like wide brimmed hat that would very much fit in with the times. So it feels like a very somber experience. The boy doesn't seem to know how to interact, and it feels as if he's been neglected from the very beginning of his life. I know there have been theories that he was an immigrant child and that they said he could not have been because of the fact that he wasn't vaccinated as all immigrants should have been. And I assume they based that on not being able to find like a vaccination site on his arm or whatever. However, I do feel he was a child of immigrants, but I feel that he was born in the United States. He wasn't born elsewhere and then immigrated over. He was born to immigrants, but he was not an immigrant himself. I believe I see him being placed into the backseat with a young girl who is probably around 11 or 12 years old, and she won't look at him. And it's interesting because the way she won't look at him says to me that she knows what his fate is. So whether they bought him from an orphanage or they were taking him on as like a foster child, I can't be too sure, but I do feel that I would lean harder toward he's part of a foster family at this point. It feels like they have a lot of children as well. So this place that he came from feels like it was overfilled. So no one even really noticed that he was gone. And in some way, maybe this was a foster home who did actually pay for this boy. And he fit in with the rest of them because he looked like he would have been one of the foster children. And it's interesting because it has been brought up in a couple of the sources where I gathered my information from that neighbors never noticed anything peculiar. But literally people have housed missing persons in their basements for years and the neighbors never had any idea. So I don't believe that really matters, that no one, quote, noticed anything peculiar, because they never do. It's always the most normal neighbor, right? So anyway, he's placed in the back seat and he's driven home in this like large sedan back to this house that almost feels like it sits higher on a hill. It looks spooky to me, but I really would venture to say that that's the energy I'm feeling of what's going on there. But anyway, the man, I feel like he's like an attorney. He's someone well-respected in town, and his daughter was someone that he would have also abused, as would his wife. But it feels that the mom, that the wife, this child is more for her to, quote, take care of than for anyone else. The girl who came forward, her name was Martha, and had said that her parents had bought him. I do believe that she has something to do with the story, but I also feel that there's some confusion involved. And if you're not familiar with that version of events, go ahead and look it up. I believe it is on the Crime Junkies podcast as well. But go look that up and listen to her story about how her parents bought this child and kept him in the basement, and he essentially became feral, and they would beat him and rarely feed him. And I do think that there's some truth to that. I think that she's a little confused about how they acquired him, but ultimately it feels like her perception of it might be a little bit off just because she was a child at the time. Also, the reason for her incredible mental health issues, I believe that it stems from the abuse that she endured from this family as well. And I do also feel that they had other foster children, and this was their only child that was born to them. However, what I think happened, what ultimately led to his demise, other than the abuse that was just ongoing, I think that the mother killed him. And I think that he doesn't have an identification because he was never really technically in the system. And I don't think that the system is anything close to now what it was back then in the 50s. So anyway, I do believe, like I said, he was an immigrant child. And I also think that the woman who, quote, bought him or took him on as a foster child in whatever capacity, he was never checked on, obviously, as this foster child. I believe that she is the one who killed him, that she was always frustrated with him, but she literally had him just to abuse him. She didn't have him for any other reason. The child never knew a day of love in his life. And I think that he was like the targeted child. And what I'm seeing is her getting so frustrated with this child, and the girl, the quote sister, the foster sister, whatever, Martha, talks about how her mom had him in the bathtub, and when she was shaking him for vomiting in the tub, that he slipped from her hands and hit his head, on the floor. And I do actually see that as being what happened. I believe that he hit his head on the floor and he that would have been the initial blunt force trauma, but that she also continued to beat him. And I believe that some of the beatings came from her own hands and some of the beating came from whatever she could find around her in the bathroom, like soap dishes, anything like that. And I also believe that the surgical incisions that we referenced before, some people have speculated that maybe someone was in his life who loved him enough to take him to have like hospital care and that kind of thing. I don't think that's actually what that was. I feel like that was some of the twisted torture that he had endured in his lifetime. There was no actual surgery and he never had a stay in a hospital. That was everything that was on his body was inflicted by the people who were charged with his care. I don't believe that the woman who handed him over had any vested interest in checking up on him or making sure that he was okay. And I do believe that while they knew that he would be found, that they had no worry about who would find him because they knew that it could never come back to them. Truly, I think that that hat, I don't even think it was related. I think it landed there. It was somebody else's hat and it was there prior to the boy being left there. I don't think it had anything to do with the people who left him there. I do think that the mother and the daughter left him there. I think that the father would have made sure it was taken care of a little bit differently, but also that he was so busy with work all the time that he didn't even really notice that the boy was gone. And when he did realize it, he didn't really care. So as news spread about this, they just kept their mouths shut because they knew that number one, no one would believe their daughter. And number two, no one would believe that they had anything to do with it because, you know, the neighbors never noticed anything peculiar. Now, who is this boy? I know eventually investigators gave him the name Jonathan. I don't know that that was his name. I actually had an H with it, whether it's like Harold or Henry or something like that. I believe he was, I keep getting Hungarian. I'm not really sure if that's accurate. I also feel that when he was buried, well, I know that the police kind of put up for his grave and eventually he was the plot that he was given in the cemetery was donated by the cemetery. They wanted him to have a place to lay. And I believe it's labeled as America's Unknown Child. And it's so tragic, but truly, I don't think that this case is ever going to be solved. And I don't think that this boy will ever have his real true name to take with him on the other side. I do, however, think that they're going to get much closer to solving it with DNA, but whatever it is that they need, they ultimately just can't grasp it. I think he was beaten. I think he was starved. And I think we are never going to find out exactly who was responsible. And that, my friends, is the end of the boy in the box.
As for now, be safe, be kind, be loving, and I'll be here again on Real Hauntings Podcast with another episode of Murder and Mediumship.
Have you ever watched a futuristic sci-fi movie and wondered, but wait, could any of this really happen? And will I live long enough to see it? That's what our show Hypothetical is about. I'm Carrie Bechet, and on this podcast, we ask what-if questions about the future. Like, what if we could read minds? What if the world's digital data was erased all at once? What would happen if the Yellowstone supervolcano erupted? Then we explore that question two ways, through speculative science fiction and through dialogue with brilliant scientists. The result is a genre-bending narrative that's interwoven with real facts provided by literal geniuses. And spoiler alert, a lot of the science fiction out there, it's not nearly as far-fetched as you might think. Come time travel with me into the future on Hypothetical. New episodes on Tuesdays, available on all your favorite podcast apps. Just search Hypothetical. That's HYPERTHETICAL.